Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at YP Sport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as Football Talk Podcast at yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Right, this week we saw Sheffield United claim a point in their 2-2 draw against Bournemouth. Middlesbrough took all 3 points with a 2-0 victory over Queen's Park Rangers, which was then followed up by a 1-0 win against Birmingham City. Bradford City claimed a valuable 3 points in their push for promotion with a 3-0 victory over Accrington Stanley, and we will be covering them later on in the episode. Doncaster Rovers came away with the win when they clashed with Crewe Alexandra. Harrogate Town fell to a 2-1 defeat at the hands of Crawley Town, which was then followed by a 0-0 draw against Wrexham. However, let's start this week with Sheffield Wednesday, who fell to a 2-0 defeat when they hosted high-flying Leeds United. Now, the result can come as... Well, it can't come as much as of a surprise. However, the hosts are still in the fight for survival at the foot of the division. Now, Stuart, what was your assessment of the game?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, if you look at the league table, you'd say no surprise. I think I sort of went into that thinking this game could go either way, really, because of the form Sheffield Wednesday have been in and the fight they've shown. But I think ultimately, once Leeds got their noses in front at the end of a very even first half, which Wednesday probably shaded, I think Leeds' extra class just showed. And you know, we know there's a big gap in the Championship between the parachute payment clubs and the rest, and it's a difficult job keeping up. But as I say, I think Sheffield Wednesday could take a lot of positives from that. That's two games they've lost out of 7 now, won the other 5, and those 2 were to Leicester and Leeds. They're very competitive in this relegation battle, and they've managed to drag quite a lot of teams into it as well. I mean, you wonder if recent results have possibly pulled Millwall just a fraction away, but certainly Plymouth in 17th look right in it, and everyone down there. So there's a lot for Sheffield Wednesday to keep playing for. They've got a difficult game at Ipswich coming up on Saturday. They've got a big one against Swansea and QPR not long after they come back from the international break. I think it's all there to play for them, really. I'd say that they were probably fractionally the better team for the first 47 minutes against Leeds, and just a moment of quality, a really good striker's goal by Patrick Bamford got Leeds' noses in front, and I'd say they were able to pull away just a little bit in the second half. I mean, that said, Leeds only scored one more. Michael Smith had a shot cleared off the line, so it was definitely not an easy win for Leeds United. But I think one of those results where both teams could take something fairly positive from it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Sheffield Wednesday's season isn't going to be dictated by results against Leeds, is it? Or, you know, obviously they lost to Leicester as well earlier this year. You know, it's going to be about how well they do against the teams around them. You know, you look at them since Rolls took over, and you know, in general, God, look where they didn't have a win until the end of October, and they've shown a good ability to bounce back after setbacks and adversity. They won 6 or 7 games since Christmas. You know, if they carry on with that sort of ratio, okay, they might have a bump in the road here and there, but they look like you know, wins never too far away, and they dust themselves down pretty impressively. I mean, I suppose the biggest example of that is when they went to Huddersfield last month, and you know, some people were foolishly starting to write their obituaries, and what a response that has been. So yeah, I agree with Stuart. I think they've got look at the run-in, they've obviously got a tough trip to Ipswich, but if they can manage to get a point there, and funny things happen in the Championship. That'll set them up for the international break and the final few laps. But it did have taken this back in the dark days of late autumn and winter. There's been tremendous progression there. There's a real unity and spirit, which is probably more remarkable for the fact that there just didn't seem to be any in the first part of the season when the club were in a real crisis on and off the pitch. And you know, obviously they've still got issues behind the scenes, but that's by the by. But yeah, I think they're in a good place. The running doesn't look, I know it's a little bit foolish sometimes to look at the Championship and run-ins and thinking you can get 3 points here, point there, that sort of thing. But it doesn't, touch wood, it doesn't look too bad, doesn't it? They've got West Brom towards the end of the season. It could be one of those in West Brom. They might be already booked in for the playoffs by then. So that might be not as hard as it might suggest. Ipswich, obviously tough. But I think they'll dust themselves down and crack on.
Yeah, I mean, they look a pretty formidable team, you know, on the day at home in particular, although they've had a couple of good away results recently too. Yeah. But I think one of the impressive things, I mean, Leon talked about, you know, they seem like quite a united group considering what's happened. I mean, considering as well that Danny Rowler's basically sidelined a few players, I think he must have managed things quite well because, you know, we know there's a few players not registered to play at the moment, but I think he was quite clever in keeping a couple of places open so that people have got something to still play for in training. And I don't know what's gone on behind the scenes. We'll probably never find out. But he seems to have done a reasonably good job of not letting these tough choices, you know, really infect the morale of the team. Because one thing you can consistently say about Sheffield Wednesday for some years now is that they've got really good core of experienced players. They've got a really good spirit about them, so you don't want to do anything that damages that. And there's no sign of it at the moment, certainly from the games I've seen, that there's any throwing the towel in or anything like that. Considering they've given everyone such a big head start, they really go into most games, it seems, believing they can get something out of it, even when the league table, as you alluded to earlier, Mark, might suggest the opposite.
Yeah, I think they're probably, there's a core of players there who've been probably conditioned by it as well. I mean, you look at last season, this time last year, funnily enough, I did Sheffield Wednesday played Cheltenham and they were in League One and they were having a few wobbles. They just lost at Forest Green and I think they need a late draw to get something at Cheltenham, and there was intense pressure on them there, you know, in terms of the different reasons. The top two race, there was themselves, Plymouth, Ipswich, of course, and in Barnsley were in it then, weren't they? So, you know, and there was every draw, every bad result was magnified. This was a sticky patch that Wednesday had to go through, and you know, the likes of Bannon and Vaux, still influential figures this year, and various others as well. And, you know, I think that's in a funny sort of way, that's probably conditioned them for what's to come. And, you know, even though they are in the relegation zone, it seems a reasonably happy ship at the minute. And, they've still got, they've got a hell of a chance for me to get out of it.
Yeah. And I think that's another point as well, in terms of being conditioned in the short term. Sheffield Wednesday have been in a relegation battle all season. Yeah. You know, we've seen teams like Blackburn get dragged into it, and we know,
Huddersfield have as well, haven't they, really?
Huddersfield have as well. And we know from season after season that it's difficult for teams to cope with mentally if they're not expecting to be in a relegation battle. Suddenly it gets to March and the penny drops. Obviously, Sheffield Wednesday don't have that problem.
No. The one that was interesting to me, I had a look the other day, Blackburn. Mm. I can't quite reel off the games that they've got, but I think they've got most of the big hitters there right at the top. And they've obviously got leads because the game's just been switched, so they've got a few sort of okay-ish games, but I sort of looked at them, and I think if they don't get any points in one or two of these, they could be banging trouble. And I agree with what Stuart said about Plymouth as well. I mean, they're still heavily leaning on their home form, so as much as it's not an ideal situation for Sheffield Wednesday and Huddersfield, you know, the good thing is that there's quite a few other teams who were banging the mix with them there, and you know, even if Sunderland lost a couple more, you know, they're going to be starting to get a bit worried as well. So it looks to me as if, I don't know, I'd probably say, you know, early 50s you'll probably need this season, maybe.
I mean, like you said, the race isn't run, so anything could happen between now and the end of the season, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And next, our attention turns to Huddersfield Town, who fell to a heavy 4-1 thumping when they welcomed West Bromwich Albion to the John Smith Stadium. They now sit 1 point off safety and have a clash with foot-of-the-table Rotherham United next on their cards. How do you see the two sides going into that game, and what were your thoughts on the 4-1 defeat against West Brom, Leon?
Yeah, it was a strange one, to be honest. Huddersfield played pretty well in the first half, and West Brom were appalling. They just didn't look anything. I think Stuart watched them the other week. I think they were a bit better at ball, but they just couldn't get going at all. They looked passive, slow. It wasn't vintage from Huddersfield, but they were winning the battles in midfield. They were pestering them at the back. And, yeah, they fully deserved the lead. I think it probably came... Well, it will have done. There's no probably about it. At the half-time, came at a good juncture for West Brom. He's a good coach. He's Carlos Corberan. He wouldn't have been happy with what he saw. He made a few adjustments. Jed Wallace, who I've liked for a lot of years, he came inside a little bit. And one or two other little changes on the front line. And, yeah, they got a goal early in the second half. And they managed to keep Mikey Johnston, who I've not seen him until Sunday. And in the first half, I was sort of wondering what all the fuss was about. But... He was excellent in the second half, and he gave some real problems to Matty Pearson. Probably kiss of death, really. I'd talked up Pearson saying how well he'd handled Jack Clark and Somerville. He's a sort of similar sort of match winners, and he'd done a job on Johnston for 45 minutes. But yeah, as soon as Albion got the first goal, it was worrying from a Huddersfield perspective. They were really, you know, ripping through them. I suppose the first goal, could it have been offside? But you know, the bottom line was it was a poor defensive half from Huddersfield. They did have chances at the other end. There was, when it was 1-1, Delano Bergsall would score in the first half. Great chance to put them back in front. That made it really interesting, but they didn't take it, and they got punished at the other end. And yeah, it turned into a really bad day. I mean, the worry with Huddersfield is they have these sort of, you know, you look at them this season, they've had some sort of heavy beating sort of pockmarked into the season. I know they got beat 4-0 at home to Cardiff. I think Norwich gave them a good hiding as well early season. Away from home, they've had sort of some bad moments as well. Obviously, Birmingham, wasn't it? 4-1, so a little concern is goal difference. If it does get if the margins are way for theme, but yeah, I mean, they've got Rotherham on Saturday, and with, you know, no disrespect to Rotherham, but for me, this is a massive must-win game for Huddersfield. I mean, it's not ideal when you're in the relegation zone going into an international break on the back of the defeat. Well, that would be magnified if Rotherham did manage to win or even draw. Really, I mean, you look at Rotherham's problems, which will probably, you know, both go into shortly. Matt, it's just it'll be a long international break if Huddersfield don't manage to win, and it's almost if the performance doesn't matter. I know he was talking the other week, Andre Brighton Wright, about, you know, performances and the points will follow. But this is sort of one of those games. It's just a must win for me. Huddersfield just got to win, really. And, you know, they won't get many more sort of better opportunities on the road. I mean, and just quickly going on to Rotherham, I think they've got to the stage now, you know, obviously, you know, the dice cast and the going down. It is probably, I think it's more about performance than points for Rotherham in a daft sort of way. I mean, yeah, they might nick a 1-0, not play well, but the supporters have just been, they've just been shortchanged, haven't they, in recent times? And you know, it's not just, I think it's not so much, they can handle the result, but when they get in, you know, when they're turning up and rolling over and getting beaten 5-0, not once but twice on the trot, you know, that's pretty alarming. And there's, you know, there's a massive emphasis on the dressing room there. there's obviously going to be massive changes at the end of the season. I think after the sort of season that they've had, there's got to be really. You know, the personnel will change. There'll be players there who probably know, yeah, I'm going to be going in the summer, but there's just a mass, you know, it's pride in performance and it's pride in the workplace, daily standards, you know, not using the training ground for excuses. It's up to the good professionals there to see how many of them there are to sort of get them through this horrible period and just hopefully provide a few crumbs of consolation in the terms of performance, which, you know, everyone that connects with the club, you know, is desperate for.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention the goal difference point myself with regards to Huddersfield, because we've seen a lot of games down the bottom of the table where the margin of victory has been quite exaggerated. Obviously, it happened in Huddersfield's favour against Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday losing 4-0 at home to Millwall was another one. So I think, you know, you might say it's clutching at straws a little bit, but again, that was another positive for Sheffield Wednesday, that they only lost 2-0 to Leeds United. It is important when these teams are behind that they don't let the roof come in, you know, and frankly, looking from afar, when you see Rotherham losing 5-0 twice in a week, they look, you know, broken, and they look like the sort of team where if Huddersfield can get an early goal, they can have a big win as opposed to just a win. Mm. Leon's totally right. I mean, we've been saying this about Rotherham and Sheffield United for the last few weeks. It really is about pride. It's about giving the supporters something to cling to. It's about, you know, showing either that your current or your future employees that you're worth a contract next season. You know, we can all see the reasons. I suppose from a, you know, if you're really honest about it, from a human perspective, it must be hard turning up week after week expecting a beating and knowing that even a win isn't likely to get you out of the relegation zone. But, get you safe in the longer term. But it is what you have to do. You just have to knuckle down and do it. And I say for Huddersfield, it's just about, say, minimising the bad days and maximising the good days, because as we've said, it's really tight down there. Certainly at the moment, goal difference is massive, and you could really see it still being so by the last day of the season.
I mean,
whatever happens on Saturday, Huddersfield win, lose, draw, I just think that the break's going to come at a good time for them, isn't it? They're just going to have to totally regroup. Hopefully they'll get one or two players back. He was talking up Rhys Healy, who came off. He was obviously arrived in January with a groin issue against Sheffield Wednesday. Talking of him maybe having a chance for the end of the month, Radulovic as well. He's had his issues, hasn't he? And Balkan as well. I just think they just somehow use this international break, try and get them up to speed and get a tune out of one of those. He's probably not going to get a tune out of all three, but, you know, it was a decent investment that Huddersfield made in January, and they need a bit of payback, really, don't they, from at least one of them. So you just have to hope that they get that from that perspective.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you know, irrespective of results, when you've got a manager come in at the time of year that he did, that, you know, we roll out the old cliche about it's like a pre-season for a new manager. You really don't get much training ground time when you come into season. So to have a couple of weeks with not many internationals away, it's really important. And hopefully, you know, we'll see a big difference come Easter.
Yeah, he's been thrown into it. I mean, I think he's had a couple of Saturdays, but in the main, it's been sort of game and, you know, rest, recover, prepare. You know, I think he will really value this time to get some work into them, and I think, you know, maybe have a little bit of recharging the batteries as well for a few days as well, and that'll just be as important, because it's going to be a massive run to the end of the season for themselves and Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, and I basically think that this season will be the perfect example of sort of being a crash course for how important everything is for every team. Not just wins, but the manner of wins, the manner of losses. Because, as you rightly say, we've been talking about the goal difference for those teams down at the bottom and how important it is to not just concentrate on their games against those that are in the top half of the table, but particularly those games against those in and around them. Because if they struggle against those, then it's almost as if they don't have a prayer against the rest of the table. So it's it's one of those where at the end of the season, I have a feeling we're going to look back and think this is a perfect advert for how important everything in terms of football really is, really.
It could be interesting. A lot of the games, you're right to mention that, Mark. There'll be that many games against teams who are fighting against each other at the bottom. You know, you look at it, it's 0-0 after 60 minutes or 1-1 after 70 minutes. Who's going to be brave to push on and try and get a win? Or are they just going to sit on their hands and think, well, the draw's okay? You know, it could be the ones who are proactive and have that bit about them and maybe chisel out a couple of wins. That could be the difference, couldn't it? You know, so that dynamic of the relegation picture, which is, you know, we've spoken up rightly about the battle for the top two, which has been fantastic this year. And I think as long if you're not involved in it, the sort of battle to avoid relegation is just as, you know, if you're a Championship observer, it's just as interesting as well. So, yeah, I think at both ends of the table, the top and bottom of it is that, that it'll be... it'll be absorbing to see how it's played out.
Yeah. And Hull City is where our attention turns to next, who played out an entertaining 2-2 draw when they welcomed Leicester City to the MKM Stadium, which now sees them level on points with 6th place Norwich City, and their push for the playoff places is still very much on track. What did you make of the performance, and how will Liam Rossini be feeling based on his side's recent performances, Stuart?
I think he'll be feeling positive because he's a positive kind of guy. I mean, that's 4 draws on the trot, which has dropped them out of the playoff places. But I think 3 of them were probably pretty good draws in the sense that they were playing Leicester and they were playing two of the teams around them in the playoff places. I think the fact that they dropped points against Birmingham City will be annoying them quite a lot because that felt like a missed opportunity. But yeah, with Hull, I kind of feel like there's no clarity in my mind at the moment yet, because you know they showed against Leicester how good a team they are. You know, they played really well against Leicester, but they still made a couple of those sloppy mistakes that cost them as well. And it's just ultimately going to rest on the balance between that. Can the positive cancel out the sloppiness? They are Rossini's always at pains to point out they're quite an inexperienced team. You know, a lot of these players are at the stage of their careers where they are going to make mistakes, and it's a case of learning from them. But again, it's just minimizing them, because like the battle to stay up, you know, the battle for 5th and 6th place in the Championship is going to be decided by very, very small margins. I don't think Hull have got anything to be, you know, worried about. I think they're in a good place, but equally they can't be complacent. I mean, it'll be a big deal for them if they can get Liam Delap back pretty quickly after the international break, because you know that they've been playing a lot at the moment with a false nine or 2 false nines at times, and it, you know, no out and out centre forward. It's not a completely bad thing. You can see its advantages, but there are times when, you know, particularly when you're playing with 2 wingers, there's no one to aim at, sort of thing. And if they can get Delap back and a centre forward who the manager is confident starting a lot, I think that will add something to their game. But yeah, I think for them, I wouldn't like to say which way it would go, really, because I genuinely can see the good and bad of the equation for them. But I suppose if you're a Hull City fan, I suppose it's a case really of taking a step back and saying, well, the last 2 years we've been fighting relegation. You know, it might be up in the air if we're going to make the playoffs, but that in itself is a huge step forward for that football club.
Yeah, I mean, they've shown the wherewithal, haven't they, Stuart? They've done well against Leicester. Obviously, did well without winning against West Brom. Great result at Southampton. Because I look at the games, they've got some huge games in April, haven't they? They've got to... looking down, they've got to play, they've got to go to Leeds. Well, I think the big one, that one's going to be Coventry, isn't it? What they've got at home. I mean, we're talking about the intrigue in the Championship. That sort of picture for the final playoff place, you know, Coventry, Norwich and Hull. And I mean, there's talk if one or two others get their act together, but I see it as primarily against for those 3 to fight that one out. you know, Leeds, Leeds, Hull, they've got to go to Ipswich as well, haven't they? In April, the player Middlesbrough who might be having a little bit of a fun at the end of the season. We'll have to see about that. But they've got some big games of Hull. But I think they've been fairly conditioned to it, haven't they, by what they've done in recent times. Stuart's right that I think Dilap coming back could be potentially very big for them, certainly in the playoffs. But they've got some match winners and big game players, haven't they? And I don't think they're the sort of finished article by any means. There is an element of inconsistency there. But, yeah, the match winners, the Carvalho's, obviously the lad from Burnley's done well as well. And I think as well there's got to be a bit of holding the nerves element as well. Stuart's right to say this time last year, you know, they just come off the back of a relegation, sort of pulling themselves out of that picture. So they'd have sort of died for this position, wouldn't they, 12 months ago. And nothing ever usually goes smoothly in run-ins. If there's a bit of a bump, the supporters have got to stick with them. Because that's ultimately what it's all about. And I think I said a few weeks ago, Hull can have some fun, and they've got some expressive players. And okay, they might not be perfect at the other end, at sloppy at times, but they've got plenty that's good about them as well.
I think I'm sort of more confident with Hull against teams like Leicester.
Teams
who play like Premier League style football, because They make the same mistakes Hull do. You know, Hull got a goal against Leicester through closing down about fast. They're very good at pressing against teams that will give you that chance. I think Leon's bang on the money. Coventry had a sort of balance between being a really good team and not quite as open. You know,
they've been there as well, haven't they?
Exactly. We saw what problems they gave Middlesbrough, who again were a really good footballing team last season. And that's again why I'm a little bit uncertain against the playoffs. I'd fancy them against a team like Southampton in the playoffs. I think a team like Coventry could make it more sticky. Could be a tougher test. But as Leon rightly says, there's a lot of potential in that squad. You know, if they're quick learners and if they just sort of minimise these mistakes, they've got the talent to maximise the really good things about them. So it's going to be exciting for Hull fans, and that's a step forward for them. In fairness, they have put a lot of money into the club, but it's not been wasted. They've really progressed.
Yeah, I think this is throwing it forward, and we'll probably talk about this further down the line if Hull do get in, and it looks, if they do get in, they're going to probably finish sixth, aren't they?
Yeah.
Or fifth. I wouldn't want to play Hull in a second leg on my home patch. And I think that could, God knows what's going to happen between now and then. But I think if they get a semi-final at home, whether they get a lead or even a draw, I think they will be very dangerous opponents in the second game for whoever it is, who would probably be favourites, wouldn't they? So, but that's thrown it on a bit, isn't it, really? But I think, on the day, I think they've shown it so far that there'll be quite a few Championship sides at the top end who are entitled to be pretty wary of them.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. And next, our focus is on Barnsley, who fell to a 5-1 defeat when they hosted Lincoln City at Oakwell, which was then followed up by a 3-2 win when they paid a visit to Carlisle United. What were your thoughts on the two performances, Leon?
Well, I think obviously contrasting, they got a good hiding and a lesson at the hands of Lincoln, who were very, very good there, and they're making a little bit of a late run for the playoffs, and in the form they're in, I wouldn't want to be bumping into them. I think the sort of riding thing from the two games is Barnsley's defence, really. It's obviously they had issues with Donovan Pines being out. They're stuck on this back three, but the sort of order that they're playing in sometimes, you know, Jordan Williams came in on Tuesday on the right. He'd previously been playing at a wing back. We've had Gavivny's been on the right, and he's been in the centre. So that's a little bit of a concern for Barnsley, but I suppose it's a case of, you know, to thine own self be true, really, isn't it? Barnsley have shown this season they're not going to do it by keeping clean sheets, are they, really? You know, they've kept one in 19. If they're going to go up this season, it's through the, you know, they might concede one or two goals. They are conceding one or two goals, but it's going to be through the sort of expression and the goals and the forward play. You know, we've spoken about Devante Cole. He was actually dropped for the game on Tuesday night. 17 goals, big call to drop him. You think, well, oof, and Herbie Kane has scored 9 goals. He was suspended. Oof, where are the goals going to come from? Barnsley had 3 different scorers. So you look at the goals for, they've got goals all over the pitch, haven't they? That isn't the problem. But you know, the flip side of that is that they do give you a chance if you're an opposing team. I think they've scored the most away goals in the league this season, but there's only 2 teams that have conceded more at home. So it's it's been a peculiar season in that regard. But I felt it was a big win for them on Tuesday at Carlisle. Yes, Carlisle are going to go down. I think they've lost 24, 25 games now. But I think I wrote a piece for the paper on Thursday. It was all set up for a fall, I thought, that game. A little bit Sheffield Wednesday going to Forest Green last season. You know, Carlisle have almost got nothing to lose. And Liam Roberts was injured, the first-choice keeper. Ben Killip came in. He'd not played since December. What else was there? There was Kirby Kane being suspended. There was Donovan Pine has been out for a couple of games. We're not quite sure how long he's going to be out, so that's not ideal. And he dropped Devante Cole and he put Cosgrove in, which was a big call. So if it had not gone right, if Barnsley had drawn or lost, there'd have been an absolute meltdown on their message board. You know, and it didn't look good early on. They conceded a goal. Carlisle, this is the—I know I throw out statistics all over the place, but this is probably the most bizarre I've seen all season. Carlisle hadn't scored at home in the league in the first half since the opening day of the season, which is absolutely bonkers. So they scored after 10 minutes, and you know the Barnsley fans are thinking, "Oh my god!" But the response was good. They didn't panic. They played the football. They made the pitch big. And they equalised and they dominated the second half and got a really good win. I know, but that said, the other side of Barnsley is that they conceded a daft goal near the end and put undue pressure on themselves. But they held out, and Neil Collins spoke afterwards, and I agree with him that in the circumstances, it's probably as bigger win as any this season. Obviously, after the 5-1 against Lincoln, getting the kick in the teeth in the previous game against Bolton, against a rival, and they had to win as well, didn't they? You look at the games the other night, Derby won, Portsmouth won, I know they were at home, someone else won, who was it? Peterborough won, and basically all the teams in automatic promotion contention won. So if Barnsley had lost or drawn, there'd have been the top 2 hopes would have been written off by quite a lot of people. So I think it was a pretty significant night for them in that regard.
Yeah, I just really like their mentality. I mean, it's not as astonishing as that, but I think it's telling. They've not had back-to-back defeats since August, you know, when they lost to Peterborough and Oxford, and that says a lot for their mentality. I mean, Leon's right. Yeah. Everything was set up for them to fail. I did the reverse fixture against Carlisle, and Carlisle should have been 4-0 up within 15 minutes of that one. So for all at their bottom of the table, you know, we say on this every week about how unpredictable all the football league divisions are and how people can pull a result out from anywhere. And on the back of Bolton, as you say, to have drawn under those circumstances, then a heavy beating, then some really big decisions. I mean, you know, I think it was a big night for Collins and his authority.
Yeah.
You know, to take that decision over Devante Cole and for it to come off. I think he'll have grown in stature in the eyes of both outsiders and his players, I think, because I think it's strange with Collins, because I think some people kind of see him as a new manager because this is his first season in English football. Because he's done 5 years of hard yards in America, he knows what he's doing. But there's still an element of sort of having to prove yourself. And I think to make decisions like that and for it to come off is really a big feather in his cap. And hopefully just, you know, when they're in tight corners, which they inevitably will be in the next few weeks, just gives the players that bit more faith that, you know, when he makes a substitution, when he makes a big call, that, yeah, we can get out of this because we've got a guy here who knows what he's doing. You know, you see that in the change in Sheffield Wednesday, for example. That belief in the coach can just take you that little bit extra, and I'm hoping that Barnsley have come out this week stronger for that as much as anything else.
Yeah, you're right. It was a brave call, Stuart, but ultimately the right one. And managers get paid. They get paid to make decisions like that. You know, I dare say one or two of the Barnsley fans at Brunton Park were scratching their heads. And I've got to be honest, I was surprised. I thought, well, is this the game to drop Cole? But fair dues to Collins, he did. And you know, his faith was just, you know, in the performance of Sam Cosgrove. He didn't score, but he did everything else but score. He used to play for Carlisle, didn't he? But he was an absolute pest for the back three of Carlisle. He was up for the fight all game. He just didn't go away. Nearly scored with one shot that was tipped over well. Had a few other sort of near misses. Set up the second goal, you know, superbly. And yeah, I was very very impressed with him, and a great call by Neil Holmes.
And when you've got the goals from all around the team that Leon mentioned earlier, it's enough to have a good performance from a centre forward. You know, in some teams, you really need the centre forward to score because no one else is going to. When you've got people chipping in all over the team, then a good all round player like Sam Cosgrove can add, you know, more to a team like that than to some others.
Yeah, and he obviously got promoted last year at Plymouth, didn't he? And he did pretty well there, so he knows what it's all about, and he's a good age and a good pro.
And next, as mentioned at the top of the podcast, we turn to Bradford City, who, following on from their 3-0 victory over Accrington Stanley, fell to a 2-0 defeat when they faced Forest Green Rovers. What did you make of their performances? And with the League Two table being so tight in the middle when it comes to teams fighting for a playoff spot, can the Bantams be pleased with their recent run of form, Stuart?
No, I don't think so. In terms of the Forest Green game, I mean, the Accrington game was a great game. They'd been on a good run of form, but you know, everybody in the squad quite rightly has been talking about, you know, we need to go on a long run now to, you know, break through that sort of stalemate around the the table. And the Forest Green game was just a reminder that, in my mind, at any rate, that they're just short of being able to produce that consistency. You know, by all accounts, they were really good at Accrington Stanley. You know, played really well on a good pitch. The Forest Green game just turned into the nightmare game for them. They switched off from the kickoff. Graham Alexander was saying they were 20 yards too deep, conceded a corner. Forest Green are 1-0 up inside 50 seconds, I think it was. And that just framed the game in a way that Bradford didn't want it to be played. Forest Green could get men behind the ball. You know, Bradford fans, whether they were there on Tuesday or not, they'd be fully aware the pitch is not great at the moment. It's not conducive to playing the quick passing the ball around that you need to break down those defences. And therefore, playing at a slower pace, it made for a really flat atmosphere at Valley Parade. So you take out the supporters, which are, you know, a big strength of theirs. And it was just, it was just flat. They just toiled away. You know, they didn't make as many chances as you felt they ought to have done for all that possession. Graham Alexander talked about how it looked like they were in control because they had so much of the ball. But he sort of argued quite rightly that Forest Green were actually quite in control because they were determining where Bradford could pass the ball and able to get men in behind. And it was just Bradford City in a nutshell at the moment. You know, they can get so far, but making that extra jump is just beyond them. And it must have been frustrating for those people who'd also been at Accrington and seen the contrast. It's not that the talent isn't there, but it is really difficult for any team to be consistent Saturday, Tuesday in League Two, League One or the Championship. But Bradford just seem a little bit short in terms of being at the level they need to be to win promotion. All's not lost. As you say, you know, the league table, it is still open for them. But that was a real dent to my confidence. I think I'd said on here a couple of weeks ago I didn't think they were going to do it, but that was sort of a further dent to my confidence that they could get over the line, and not that they could produce the performances that they need, but they could produce enough of them between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, it was, unfortunately, it's one of those results that Bradford City have thrown in almost since time immemorial, isn't it, really? So,
especially at home, Leon,
Of course, yeah, absolutely. And just when you think they're getting somewhere. And, I mean, the stuff about the pitch is interesting. I thought Richie Smallwood made a good point for me that, yes, it is difficult on the pitch. It's probably heavy and, you know, difficult from a physical aspect, but, you know, the fact, the preparation, you know, it seems to be the last few home games as a pitch inspection, you're coming in thinking, is it on, is it off? You know, that was little sort of 1 or 2% psychologically affecting your sort of preparation. I think that, he mentioned that Smallwood, and I thought he was onto something there. You know, professional footballers, like you said, they eat the right things. You know, they know what times to travel, this and that. You come in, you think, oh, it might be off, lads. It's a bit, oh, you know, that's something else that I would probably, you know, I've got sympathy in that respect, and it's hard to deal with. I think Stuart's spot on. They do look a little bit short, but the thing is, it is still there for them. There's still enough games, if you've got to think, you know, the glass is half full, that no one, Graham Alexander was right as well. He said that no one's having a run where they're going to reel off 7, 8, 9 wins on the trot. So someone's going to nick into the playoffs almost, aren't they? They'll probably lose one or two, get a nick in. It looks a little bit far away for Bradford, but it might, just might, who knows? But they've got two home games now against teams who are probably going to go at them a bit more, shall we say. Notts County are one of the, I think they're a pretty hot and cold side, but they'll certainly have a go, and they'll try and, they won't have 10 men behind the ball, put it that way, like Forest Green, which was within the rights, wasn't it, that scored in the first minute. They're fighting for their lives, you know, every right to do that. And Mansfield as well, I mean, look, they're sort of top of the table. They certainly won't be defensive, and they've not got where they are by adopting that approach. So two teams are going to, you know, they'll try and come for a good game of attacking football. Maybe that will suit Bradford and bring a different narrative. But I think I agree with Stuart. They're just a little bit short this season.
I mean, it's our job here to be realistic about them, and it's their job to be unrealistic about it.
Yeah.
You know, in a way like Rotherham as well, they can't give up the fight, and they shouldn't, because it is still there. And just on the point Leon made about the pitch, I mean, he's absolutely spot on. I think there'll probably be some people shouting at the podcast saying, well, it was the same for Forest Green, and it was the same for Forest Green, but it's the accumulation, isn't it, Leon? It's the fact it's you having to do it, take that blow. You know, they obviously had the Barrow game called off.
Psychologically, isn't it?
It just adds up, doesn't it? It just wears you down a little bit, and you know, to be frank, it can change the way you play sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Mark Hughes team would have struggled even more on that pitch, mm-hmm. because they were so into their possession football. It just slows down the pace of the game, and I just feel like, you know, it doesn't just apply to Bradford. When you're a club with a big following and a lot of expectation, you want to play in a way that brings the fans into the game, and that generally means playing at quite a high pace and being quite positive. And that wasn't really the way Bradford could go that night. It just sort of added to that feeling of, it was just a bit of a meh game, you know. It wasn't that Bradford were rubbish. It wasn't even that they were the second best team in the game, but it just lacked a spark, and it just felt a bit humdrum. And you know, I said in my match report, they talk about, you know, every game's a cup final. It felt a bit like a third place playoff rather than a cup final feel about it. And that they need to generate that in these games, because they are going to have to do something more than humdrum to just get over the line from where they are.
Yeah, but they've got to keep going for it, haven't they? I mean, a few Absolutely. Weeks ago, Graham Alexander was, I think he was saying when he was at Scunthorpe, I think they just missed, I think they ended up just missing out, but I think he said sometime, I don't know, end of March or something, they were 15th or 16th, and they had a crazy run, and they nearly, you know, they so close to to get it in. So while they've something to aim for, and you know, it might be after Tuesday. You know, they've got two more high profile games at home, something to get the teeth into, and if they do get a win on Saturday, can turn around, hopefully turn around again a bit more expectation. But you know, we'll have to see, won't we?
Yeah. If football was realistic, most of the great games in football would never have happened. Sheffield Wednesday would be playing in League One now. You know, Liverpool would have X fewer European Cups and so on and so forth. And, you know, people like us saying this, Bradford players should actually be listening to this and reading this to motivate themselves. We'll show you we are better than this. And, you know, if they do, we should be queuing up to say what a great achievement it was. But in all honesty, it just feels out of reach right now.
And finally for this week, I turn to Leon for his player of the week before looking to Stuart for his team of the week. So, Leon, who's caught your attention this week?
Well, there's one or two, really. Adelican at Doncaster, he's really revived them, hasn't he? I mean, they were sort of going nowhere. We're all fearing another rough end to the season. You know, he's continued his upturn, and good result for Doncaster. I think the thing that was missing when you look at them was probably a bit of a statement win against a team who were up there, and Crewe are, to be fair. So that was a good moment in their season. Luke Kaelin at Middlesbrough were, speaking about going nowhere, they weren't really, were they, a few weeks ago? I mean, even looking over the shoulders, if it continued. They've suddenly won three in a row, probably started off by a poor decision by Bobby Madley in the game against Norwich when he sent off a Norwich player for absolutely nothing. But that's by the by. Middlesbrough took it. Ayling set up a goal in that win. He set up a goal in the win against QPR, wasn't it, on Saturday? Yeah. And then did well for the goal at Birmingham. So, yeah, he had a tough sort of first half of the season at Leeds. Found himself out of the picture. He's played 10 or 11 games now at Borough on loan. Doing well, and you know, if he carries on, he might have a chance of a permanent contract there. But I think if I had to put probably a little bit boring, and probably because I used to play centre half many, many moons ago, it's difficult to decide which one, but I'll probably go for Ethan Ampadu, really. I think he's been outstanding all season in two positions, which just goes to show what a top signing he was when he came last summer. Obviously, played the holding midfield role first half of the season. Now he's, with Stroy being injured, he's slotted in totally seamlessly into the back four. You know, his partnership with Rodon is the best in the Championship for me in terms of central defence. He played together with Wales. You know, they're the Dolly and Daisy of the Championship, aren't they for me? Stuart will know what I'm on.
Yeah, that's too an older reference for you.
And it's been great to see. I tweeted a few weeks ago, and I'll stand by it. I think teams that go up, they're going about goal scoring, this, that and the other, but quite often the ones that will finish in the top two and win the league, it's clean sheets, isn't it? And, you know, I think Leeds have conceded, is it 3 goals in 12 games this year? League game. Which is absolutely, well, it's brilliant, isn't it? It's scary for the rest of the division. But those two are just so consistent and know what they're doing, and I'm splitting hairs really to decide which one, to be honest. But I think the fact that I plumped for Ampadu more because, you know, he's gone from one position, he's had to go back, and you know, he's still the top professional you'd never have noticed. So I'll go for him by a short head above Rodon, I think.
I think I'll go with that as well, having had the privilege on Friday. I used to be a left back who played centre back. It's great to see. It was a really, really good defensive performance by Ampadu. And I'm really hoping to see him in the Premier League next season, because he's obviously been around the Chelsea setup for a very long time, but he looks ready to make that step up now. Yeah. He looked really class, whether it be at centre back or in central midfield. We know he can do both.
Yeah. Those two might be all right in the Premiership as well, Stuart.
Exactly.
They're going to pull up any trees at the top end of the table, but that's not a bad two, isn't it, if you're in the bottom half?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I would fully endorse that one. And in terms of the team of the week, Mark, again, I think it was, you know, it was a really good week for Leeds because of how good Sheffield Wednesday are at the moment, you know, particularly at Hillsborough. But, you know, we've we've praised them a lot this season. I think the two that really stood out for me, the two team performances, and again, Leon's alluded to them already, but because of what has gone before, was Doncaster beating Crewe. I think that was really big for them, and that gives you encouragement that they can
move into the next season.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a really tight call between the two. But I'll go for Middlesbrough. I think just because, again, you know, they've been in a difficult period. You know, probably one of the, not the the first, because he had one early in the season, but one of the first difficult periods Michael Carrick's had as a manager, and they've come through it really well. And you know, a little like we were saying with Bradford before. I feel like they've probably got too much to do to make the playoffs, but they've put themselves in a position where they can believe and they can go for it. And yeah, two really big, three really big victories on the trot for them. I think Middlesbrough are my team of the week. Yeah,
they probably will. I agree with Stuart. They probably will miss out, but they'll be a dangerous side to play potentially, won't they?
Definitely.
They're running, and they're a sort of patchy side. When they're good, they're good. They can get these wins, and when they're off it, so in that regard, they're probably dangerous. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, whatever happens until the end of the season, it's just going to be one hell of a ride, and we should just enjoy it.
I think that's the bottom line, Mark. I mean, obviously, not if you're a Sheffield United or a Rotherham.
Yeah, of course not.
But that's probably the two. Pretty much exceptions to the rule, really, aren't they? Even Doncaster are having a bit of fun at the minute, and after a pretty indifferent season. But yeah, most of our sides can have a bit of fun, and for a lot of them, there's you know, the season's on the line, and this is the business time now.
Yeah. And it's not just a Yorkshire thing, you know. Across the divisions, there's very few teams with you know, nothing to play for in terms of going up or down, which makes, as Leon alluded to earlier, makes looking at run-ins and trying to second-guess things really difficult. But it makes it really exciting if you're lucky enough to be a neutral.
Yeah. It is. It's a good advertisement for the EFL, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it is, yeah.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wobrell, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.